broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host.
And welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Investor Exchange. Something a bit different for you this week, where we're going to have a special guest on the episode. Before we get into that, just a quick recap as to where we're at. Unfortunately, the majority of the crew are away this week. With the Easter break and some holidays, you've found it's just me, Brett Dickinson, here hosting this one in the studio with a special guest, whilst Louis, Joel and Steph are away enjoying some holidays. So we did have a break over the Easter weekend, and we're all back and firing from a business perspective. So to do something different today, rather than our usual format of the four of us having a talk and discussing the different areas of our expertise, we've actually got a special guest today who's going to talk mainly about the process of getting finance for purchasing property. Obviously, with my forte being in the property space, it was nice for me to bring along a guest that matched an area that I understood. So please welcome to the show, I've got Terry Kyprios here from Financial Network Group.
Good morning, Brett. Thanks for inviting us along.
Pleasure, mate.
Broadcast and looking forward to the session.
Very good. Now, I will say for the listeners as well, because if anyone's been listening regularly, they know that Joel and I like to rant on about Collingwood. Terry's another Collingwood supporter, so that's the reason he's our first guest. Welcome aboard on that note, mate.
Well, thank God we won yesterday. Seemed like that last quarter, they could have ran over us.
But yeah, it was a tight one. So we're recording this the day after Anzac Day. Both Terry and I went to the Anzac Day game between Collingwood and Essendon, which Collingwood managed to hang on, so we're happy today.
We certainly are.
Yeah.
And let's hope they improve as the season goes on.
Indeed. Well, let's get into your business, Terry. So Financial Network Group, you started that.
I did, some 5 years ago.
Yep.
I identified at that stage what sector of the market I want to hit. Being that I was self-employed previously myself in the furniture industry, so I relate a lot with self-employed people, so I target that market. I do yep. PAYG, mums and dads.
Yep.
Mainly because self-employed people tend to have a harder time getting loans. Their income streams are done differently to a PAYG.
Well, we'll get into that in a little bit more detail, but let's backtrack. So Financial Network Group itself, so it's a mortgage broking business, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. So that's your core business, is mortgage broking?
Yes, it is.
Firstly, let's talk about it. I mean, in previous episodes between the rest of the crew and I, we've discussed a little bit about mortgage broking and how we believe that mortgage brokers are a real benefit to a lot of our potential clients and our existing clients. Tell us a little bit about what a mortgage broker does versus potentially going straight to the bank directly to get a loan.
Well, if you go directly to a bank, you're governed by their policies. At the same time, then their interest is to maximise their potential earnings. So to get your business, they're not looking at what's the best rate they can give you. It's what's the least amount they give out to get your business. As a mortgage broker, we'll analyse your information and able to assess where's this best placed and who's got the best rate for your circumstances. And everyone's circumstances are different.
Of course, yeah. And so as you're saying, if I were to go directly to the bank that I've always had my accounts with or previous mortgages with and just said I need a new home loan or I want to refinance or change loans, I'm only limited to whatever they're going to offer me, aren't I?
Correct.
And they're not going to do any comparative analysis. They're just going to say this is the best we can do for you from our perspective.
Absolutely not. And that's where there's a benefit going to a mortgage broker, because the mortgage broker is there to assist you to analyse all your information.
Yep.
Potentially do a credit report on you, just to see what your credit score is, assess all your income streams, assess if there's any late payments and so forth, prepare the documentation to go to the right lender that's going to approve it, rather than roll up to a bank and hope they're going to approve it, and whether you fit in their policies or not.
So let's get into a bit more detail about that part of it, because in a way, anyone that wants to go to a bank or to a mortgage broker and get a loan, there's a process that every lender, whether it's a mainstream bank like the Big Four we talk about. Right. And on that, Terry, how many different lenders do you have access to that you could potentially get a loan from for a client?
Approximately 25.
25. So most people that are listening to this probably think of the Big Four banks and maybe a few of the other second tier banks that they may have heard of, but you've got 25 potential lenders.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And each of those different lenders would have certain policies and processes of how they would approve a loan.
Well, there is, because sometimes I had a, if it's okay with you, I had a client, I remember probably about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
He had something like 11 defaults on his file.
Default on his file. So explain, so by a default, what does that mean?
Well, defaulted by not paying either that credit card or a service that was provided.
Right.
That credit provider then put a default on that person.
Okay, so it wasn't file. A default against one particular loan. It was a default on his credit file of other providers.
Correct.
So these could be things like credit cards that he hadn't paid on time, phone bills.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Correct. So he tried to go through mainstream banks. It was never going to work.
Yep.
Because a mainstream bank can't lend to someone that's got a default. It's just not in their credit policies.
So explain how that works. So if, let's say I'm potentially wanting to get a loan and a year or two ago I failed to pay a mobile phone bill and they chased me up and I never paid it, and then they put a default on my credit record, don't they?
Correct.
So there's a record that sits there. Now, as soon as I then apply for a mortgage, the bank or whoever is reviewing, that comes up and that can be an instant rejection.
Red flag.
Red flag, straight away, won't get approved.
Correct.
Okay, so if I wasn't aware of that process and I maybe didn't even know of that default.
Which has happened with some of the clients.
Has happened. So I can go straight to a bank and run this whole process, and just because of one simple thing, which might only be a $10 or $15 issue,
yep.
I get rejected for, even though I may be able to have a lot of other factors going my way that should get me a loan.
Correct. And then what you find some of these clients do is they go from one bank to another, and then what they're creating further distress on their credit files, credit scoring.
So, yeah, explain that in a bit more detail.
Well then, as you're applying for more loans, your credit score starts reducing. There's good credit score and bad credit score. So this particular client that had 11 defaults, and it took us 6 months to clean up his file.
6 months to clean it up?
To get it through. Now, he attempted 2 years to get loans through. He went through a couple of mortgage brokers, which probably could have done a better job for him. Went through the major banks. So he had, in 5 years, a total of 148 inquiries on his file.
Wow, okay.
With 11 defaults, one being paid. They're all small amounts. They all added up to about 11 grand in total. The smallest one was $500 that he had paid.
Yep.
So what we then did, he had cash in the bank. So what we then did is put a strategy together. He then negotiated with the other 10 default people that put the defaults on.
Yep.
Got him to agree to remove it, providing he paid, which he did. So what remained on his file then was only one default, showing of $500. We weren't still able to get it through a major bank, but by assessing his information, so this took a plan of about 5 months, we then able to then clear that up, had a $500 default left paid that we couldn't get removed. And then we went about, we actually took it to ME Bank at the time. They had a policy that providing he hadn't, they didn't have an issue of the amount of inquiries that he had over the 5 year period. As long as he didn't have more than 7 in the last 12 months, he actually had 6 at that stage.
Wow. So let's talk about this particular scenario, because this service sounds that, you know, if you facilitated this and put a plan in place, obviously that's a lot more than just finding a lender and saying, here's your best rate, here's the application. You're actually looking at their whole scenario and saying, well, you're not going to get a loan, or you're not going to get a suitable loan on suitable terms with your credit record and everything else.
Absolutely. And that's where the advantages are with a broker. A broker, if they're skilled enough to look at the information, able to work out where can this, what needs to be done to prepare the file to be submitted.
Yep.
What needs to be cleaned up, what needs to be organised, and which is the right lender that's going to accept it once it's at the stage where you've planned it, that this is now clean enough to be submitted to this particular lender.
Okay, so
fit in their policy.
So we're talking now about people that have got credit issues, as you said, some defaults. So you're saying, if I'm reading this right, that people that have got poor credit ratings or defaults on their record, there is a process they can go through to get them to an approved, whether it's with a major bank or one of the other lenders you've got, there is a process that you know you can hold their hand and take them through. Absolutely. To get them to a point where they can obtain a loan.
Absolutely. And look, the other factor is another client that I had that went through a divorce. And I think the way banks are structured at the moment, and there's a lot of people that get divorced, I think somewhere in the facility of almost half.
Yeah, I'm hearing that.
And this particular client came to me while he was going through a messy separation. He was self-employed. His partner didn't work, so therefore, by law, he couldn't freeze any of the accounts. He had to let her have access to the accounts.
Right.
Luckily, she didn't abuse them, but she took more than what she wanted to. But anyway, at the time, we got a loan for him through the separation. 2 years later, he came back to me for another loan. And this guy was squeaky clean, no problems. And I said to him, and I won't mention his name, and I said to him at the time, look, let's just get another report done, being that you went through a messy situation, just to make sure your file's clean. Now,
right.
This guy was pretty prompt paying everything, and he goes, no, Terry, there won't be a problem with that.
And this is prior to you lodging an application for any loan?
Absolutely.
This is like your pre-assessment process?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I sent him off a report, and you can get, by the way, a free report. And the website is www.myfreecredit.com.au. You can apply that once a year.
So anybody can go to that website?
You can.
What information do they need to have?
It's just a link. Once you go onto that link, it will just ask you to download your license, full details. It only takes about 5 minutes, and generally it takes about 5 working days
right.
to come back. It'll come back with anything that might be red flagged on your file.
And this would be the same or very similar information that a lender would potentially be looking at when you make an application?
Well, the difference with this scenario is it doesn't record through this facility, it won't record that you've made an inquiry on your file. If you go through a lender, the lender will record that they've made an inquiry on your file.
Yeah, okay.
And the more inquiries go on there, the worse your credit score becomes.
Now, that's another interesting point. And I have heard this before from another broker as well, that if someone is applying for a loan and they're shopping around, they may go to a number of different banks or even a number of different brokers. And if they have too many of those investigators, almost like inquiries of their credit record, it creates more of an issue for them.
It does, because what happens is at the end, that lender that's going to approve that loan, to do due diligence, it's got to look and say, well, you've made X amount of inquiries prior. Did those previous lenders find something that we haven't?
Or
if we approve it, and was found that you defaulted down the track, we had to take you to court, for example, it's easy for your solicitor to turn around and say, well, you can see 6 previous lenders didn't go ahead with this application.
Yeah.
So it falls in under responsible lending.
Of course, yeah.
So the bank's always looking at how to mitigate their risk.
So from an advice perspective then, Terry, anyone looking for a loan, it sounds like, well, I mean, there's probably a lot of things we can touch on, but this in particular,
we can talk 3 hours on these topics.
Should they make sure that before applying, because obviously this is having an impact, if they're shopping around trying to get some understanding, these inquiries are getting registered and potentially impacting their ability to get a loan.
Absolutely.
So what should they do if they're shopping around or wanting to figure out what their potential for a loan is?
Well, maybe this has been biased because I'm a broker myself. The first thing I'll do is seek out a broker. You might find out friends that have used a broker. Find out who you relate to. Interview a couple of brokers. Because it's more of a benefit going through a broker. At the end of the day, that broker will be able to, if he does the right processes, do all the credit checks, work out how your income streams are done, understand your personal circumstances.
Yep.
And able to then come back and advise you these are the options we can go through. So your success rate becomes much higher than you willy-nilly going to any bank and hoping you fit in their policies or they find something that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
And it could be just late payments that you've had. It doesn't make you a bad credit client, but it can create a problem because at the end of the day, if you have late payments on some bills that you didn't pay, the bank at the end of the day has to decide, well, if we accept this loan and you default down the track, at that time, you could claim that you were under duress and we shouldn't have approved this loan.
Oh, okay.
So sometimes there's a bit of cleaning up.
Yeah, sounds like it. Now, the cleaning up, you mentioned some times earlier where, you know, one of your existing clients or previous clients went through, you know, it took a few years for them to get there. You know, they'd gone through the process of applying and then you had a 6-month process of cleaning up their record. Most people in our experience, when it comes time to apply for a loan, is usually when they've found a property and they want to buy.
Yeah, most people tend to do that. And as you know, you can put subject to 14 days.
Subject
to finance.
Subject to finance. But that's not a lot of time.
It's not.
Especially if these issues are coming up.
And especially with the environment the way it is, banks are taking a hell of a lot longer assessing and do their due diligence. Because a lot of the banks have been caught out with their policies where what's happened in the past where banks have created policies and if it doesn't fit their policy, they'll take it to a higher senior assessor that would approve it. Now APRA's stepping in and saying, well, why are you approving a loan that is outside of your policy?
Oh, okay. And is this on the back of the Royal Commission? Is this one of the things that's been a flow?
It has. So you've got a couple of banks, like, probably won't mention the names of them, but we're talking the major four.
Yep.
One in particular is probably doing better than the other three because their policies have been, for some time, a lot broader than a lot of the other banks.
Okay.
And some of those banks, one in particular, is finding it harder to approve the loans because it doesn't fit their credit policy.
So are you preempting here that they may be changing policy soon to allow this?
They're going to have to because they've had to reject business that they were able to take it to a high assessor and look at it and at their own discretion approve it. But APRA is stepping in and saying, why is this getting approved if it's outside your policy?
Yeah, interesting.
So what that tells me is some of the banks worked within their own framework and said our first tier assessors will get them to approve at this level.
Right, like a filtering process.
Correct. And therefore it goes to the next level, a senior analysis that says, no, that's fine. We don't have an issue with that. We're going to approve it. But APRA is saying, but hang on a sec, that's not originally in your credit policy.
So APRA almost saying, well, you shouldn't have this filtering process.
Correct.
Whoever is assessing it at the first level should have the rules in effect.
Correct.
Yeah.
And one of the major banks, which is CBA, their policy is a lot broader and have been. Therefore, in some ways, they're rubbing their hands. And so some of our competitors can't get these loans done. We can't.
No, okay.
We've got a broader range of policy.
So let's talk a little bit about the Royal Commission then. And so when the Royal Commission first came about, did you notice any changes in the lead up to that being announced? Or what have you seen in your experience throughout the Royal Commission from sort of the inception of it to whilst it was running to now the knock-on effect and the implementation? What have you seen? Changes in restrictions and timelines? What sort of impact is it having?
Well, the Royal Commission was put there to look at misconduct and found, don't hold me to the exact figures, but it was something like 90,000 inquiries on the banks of misconduct.
Wow.
Versus like a couple hundred in the broker channel.
Yeah, okay.
But what's happened at the end is they've really tampered with competition. The broker took the brunt of the whole scenario. And I can only put that down to that the major banks, which regulate our economy.
Yep.
And the government guarantees
behind those big banks.
Correct.
Yep.
So they've got to protect those. So yeah. I think the brokers will put in the fire line, to be honest with you. And if this all goes ahead the way they've scheduled it, it'll be a disaster for mums and dads out there.
When you say this goes ahead, are you talking about the banning of commissions that's been slated? Or?
Correct.
Yeah.
If it's a user pays scenario,
yes,
it's not going to be a good scenario for the end user.
Well, we've voiced our opinions on this. Joel, Louis, myself have all had this discussion on previous episodes of the podcast that some listeners may remember, and we're strongly of the belief that brokers should not have their commissions banned by any means. We believe that maybe there's a standardized commission rate or something that can be done so that the broker gets remunerated the same amount regardless of which lender they go to. But banning the commissions we see is only just going to disempower the person looking to borrow because they're going to be stuck. You know, they're either going to have to pay a broker up front, which
correct,
a lot of people won't see the value or won't be able to justify.
Yep.
So therefore, they're not going to get the guidance, the advice, as you're saying. No one there to help them clean up their credit record or advise correct them where's the best process and the best way to go. And they'll be stuck going to the one-off bank and only being able to get what that bank offers. And if it doesn't fit within that scope, they're stuck.
And rates will go up.
And
that's a worse outcome.
Less competition.
For the consumer.
So Yeah, we don't see that. Yeah, banning commissions for brokers, we don't see is going to work for the industry or work for the consumer as a whole. We just think that's the wrong way to go about it.
And with what the Royal Commission's come up with, I really can't see how that's going to benefit the end consumer if it was to be all banned and restructured. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, agreed. Look, Terry, we're going to take a quick break.
Yep.
And we'll come back and investigate a little bit further.
All right, thank you.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
And welcome back, listeners. We're here with Terry Kyprios, who's a mortgage broker with Financial Network Group. Now, Terry, we haven't mentioned your business's website yet. Do you want to give your website or your business a quick plug, how people could get in touch with you if they like what they're hearing?
Yeah, it's financialnet.com.au.
Excellent. Now, Terry, kicking off from where we left off before the break, you'd mentioned a bit about some existing and previous clients that had some issues with credit records and the time it may take for them to get them cleared up for approval. Now, most of the clients that we would potentially refer to you via, you know, our network and our client base are more than likely looking to buy a new house, mm-hmm. buy an investment property, or refinance an existing mortgage.
Yep.
So most of the time when we're going to refer them to you, we're expecting that to come about within probably a three-month time frame.
Yep.
Now, that's a much shorter time frame than some of the timelines you mentioned earlier. So for anyone that may not be a client of ours and is looking to get involved in obtaining a mortgage or potentially refinance, what should they be preparing in advance to make sure that this is going to be as quick and as seamless and as easy a process and they can get the best value loan out there?
Well, first process I do once I engage with a client, I'll have a 5-minute chat with them over the phone. I'll then get their email address, send them what I require, which is a fact find.
Yep. Similar to what the financial advice process
correct.
Is, a fact find, yep.
I'll also ask for certain supporting documents, payslips, tax returns.
And if it's like we need when we're doing fact finds for clients for our financial advice mm-hmm. business here, it's really critical that they tell us everything and tell us the truth.
Absolutely, and I've had a couple of incidents which we won't go into. I'll apply a loan for ANZ, and this particular client had a couple of issues with their credit file. The silly thing about it is they disclosed to me all their credit cards except for ANZ, and we're putting them...
And that was... yeah,
I'm not sure what that person was thinking.
So that's fair. Yeah, we do need full disclosure. So if you're going to help someone, it's important that they give you all the information.
Absolutely. I think when you engage with a broker, you need to be as open and provide everything. The more information the broker's got, the better they're going to assess. It's not what they're going to see that's bad that scares them. It's not knowing what you don't know type.
Yeah.
By having all that information, you then prepare things properly.
Yeah. So I guess the way we would look at it too is that anything you try to hide will be found out, so you're better off to bring it to us before it gets to a later episode and becomes more impactful.
Correct. If it happens to be something that, you know, we're looking at a particular bank and you didn't disclose something, there's no point in putting it through that lender if something's going to come up as a red flag.
Right. So if anyone out there is worried about a certain financial position or debt or other credit record issue, it's better that they tell you that up front and you can strategize about how to either overcome it or
correct.
Steer away from that potential lender to one that might be more willing.
What we're looking at doing is looking at that file, good or bad, and just seeing that how is it best placed and how clean it is. So when we put the process of the application through a lender, it's like a chapter. Chapter one, yep, that ticks off. The credit assessor sees it. Chapter two ticks off. They're always going to come back with something small.
Yeah.
What you don't want is something that's not well prepared and you throw it in and they're coming back with so many questions.
Right.
And then you're chasing your tail after that. And
okay, so the first step is the fact find. So you communicate with a client, they give you all the information. Providing they give you all the information,
yep.
What happens next?
I then, in my own time, spread it out on a table, look it through, analyse it through. I then look at where's this loan best placed. If there's a couple of issues there, there might be a late payment here and there or something, then I'll discuss that with the client, how we go about processing it,
yep,
and how we're going to clean it up. Well, let's just say it's purely vanilla. There's everything straightforward. It's a PAYG, ticks all the boxes, done a credit file check on them as well, which I generally do.
Yes.
I'll then go about putting the application through.
Okay. So will you have decided on a particular lender by then?
I would have analysed their information. And let's just say it was a vanilla. That means they can go to any one of the banks.
Right. So their record's clean, their information's
spot on.
All that. Yep.
Yep. Then it becomes, is there a particular lender they prefer to deal with?
Because of existing business they may have,
correct.
Other accounts. Yep.
Correct.
Sure.
Also, then it becomes the rate. Who's going to give us the best rate? At the same time, which lender is going to service you the best?
Yeah, okay. Ongoing.
And the process doesn't stop there. Once we put the application through, we follow it right through till the end, till it gets approved.
Right.
Update the client through the process. Once we get approval, everything's all done. We also have a process where annually we do reviews on those loans.
Okay, so anyone that's been able to obtain a loan with your guidance, every 12 months you review that loan just to make sure it's either at the best rate or it still fits their circumstances.
Well, what you find with banks, especially the major four, they tend to have rate specials.
Yes.
Very much get them in, get them through the channel, over a period of time, start doing rate creeps.
Yeah, okay.
So if you don't check these things, time goes by. The longer you've been in that loan, the higher the rate you're paying, unfortunately.
Which should work the other way, shouldn't it? Loyalty should have you not, get a better deal the longer you're with
it's
them.
It's not the case. So the best way to get around that is annually review that. And that, therefore, if it's like 5-10 base points, it's gone up. I'm always going to know what the market is at.
Yes,
what that lender's current rate is.
Yep.
The consumer's never going to know that.
Yeah.
And once I identify that there's been an incorrection of a base point added to the loan, I'll get that corrected.
Okay. Well, we were just talking about, obviously, the process of getting the loan approved. How much time should a buyer or a person wanting a loan allow from the time they first deal with you to knowing if their record, if they provide you all the information all relatively clean, how long should they allow between knowing they've gone to you and knowing when the loan would be ready for settlement?
Once I've obtained all the information that I've required, the application only takes 2 or 3 days to put it together, get it signed, put it through. You could have an answer within 14 days.
Okay. So 2 weeks from the time you've got all the information you need and you know, a few days for you to massage it all into the right proposition and application.
And it's vanilla.
Yeah. Okay. So 14 days for an approval?
It's stretching out a little bit at the moment.
Okay.
That's the best case scenario.
Best case is 14 days.
But I think even with people that don't have any, you know, clean files and so forth,
yep,
you're still talking 14, 21 days. I've had a few clients that have had to extend their subject to finance clause.
Right.
That's a regular thing that's happening, only because the banks are dragging their feet.
Yeah. And look, we've experienced that. We had a client recently purchase a property in Brisbane and, you know, we did have the 14-day clause in there for finance. We thought, you know, that was more than enough time based on all the information we had at the time available. But yeah, again, the loan did get approved, but it still took an extra week on top of that for reasons we couldn't fully understand, but it was just their internal processes. And
the best thing to do if you know you're going to be in the market purchasing a product, a property, the best scenario would be is prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Go engage with the broker, sit down with them, tell them what you're intending to do. The broker could also work out your serviceability, maximum loan amount.
Now, this is a really good point because most of the work I do with UGC clients or clients from outside of us is on helping them source an investment property and find something that's going to meet their long-term goals. But a big reason we like investment property or property as an investment is because of the ability to get leverage. So if you can borrow money at a lower rate than what the asset value is growing at, you're getting extra value increase more than just your own money working, it's other people's money. So we're big believers in that strategy. But before you can do that, we want to make sure people are aware of what amount of borrowings they can get, because that's what sets our budget, to know what sort of price we're going to pay for a property. So one of the first things we would do as soon as someone's interested in potentially investing in property is to say, go and get a pre-approval. Now, is that the process you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Because then we could assess that person's, one, the LVR.
Yep.
What the strength is there. Equity out of their existing asset.
Yep.
We could assess their income streams. What's the maximum they can borrow? Potential rent they'll get out of that property.
Yeah.
And then that person now knows that I can borrow up to X amount. So you know the price range you can go into.
Yeah. And they can, so typically when you do get those pre-approvals, they set an LVR and an indicative rate so they can start planning their cash flows.
Absolutely.
Everything. Perfect. And that matches in really well with obviously our financial planning clients.
Yep.
Because, you know, all of that stuff needs to come together. Obviously, if they're investing in shares or property and they've got other issues in their life that they've got to manage cash flow wise, we don't want them taking on a property because they love it as an investment, but the costs of servicing the debt or, you know, rates, all the other costs associated are going to put too much of a burden. So it's important we know what that indicative amount of borrowings and servicing rates are going to be.
And the benefit you get as well, you've got bargaining power. You've already got a pre-approval, so you know you could afford that property.
Yes.
Imagine in the environment we're in at the moment, and I've come across this with a few real estate guys, where you could offer the property not subject to finance, you got better bargaining power.
Okay, so take us through that process, because I agree, if you can go in and give an unconditional contract up front with a price, that can really show a motivated vendor that there's a serious deal that they can take straight away. So I agree, that's a great bargaining tool. Can you go with confidence on the back of a pre-approval to know that you can therefore go unconditional? Is that solid enough? What would you want to know?
Well, other than the postcode of the property,
yep,
because that's the only thing that could, depending where that property's situated.
Yes.
I mean, if you're talking in a city, not well within Melbourne or major city scenarios, not going to have a problem.
Yep.
But if you're looking at acreage or something in country towns and that, you'd want to know beforehand, you put it subject to...
So you would go subject to finance on something that's a little bit outside the ordinary?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
But people that are looking at buying, say, a house or apartment townhouse within 20Ks of one of the capitals?
Yep, perfect.
Right. So you could pretty much bank on whatever your pre-approval is. You could pretty much be confident that you would get that formal approval once you signed a contract.
Absolutely. I had a client early in the year, and she's just a PAYG, worked out her serviceability, told her this is what you can go and spend up to. She was able to bargain a better property. She put an offer in, was lower than the other person's offer.
Yep.
By about 10,000.
Yep.
The difference was she got it because she didn't have to put it subject to finance.
Right. So the seller of the property could have more confidence that this is a deal, whereas the other person, they might agree to take that extra 10 grand, but in 2 weeks they find out it's never going to happen.
And the agent's more motivated because, you know, he's going to get paid at the end of the day.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone that's got subject to finance, this falls through, 3 weeks go past, and we're stuck.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that current buyer that put an offer that was lower is ready to go now. So do we take that now or do we punt?
Yeah, agreed. So, yeah, and look, we agree wholeheartedly as well that the pre-approval process is so integral to the ability to buy a property, because not only does it give you the confidence of you know, being able to go in and make an unconditional offer, but it also sets your budget and your parameters so you can be really confident that you're making the right decision.
Well, the last thing you want to do is go out there and you're bidding on something or you're putting an offer in and you don't even know whether you can meet that or not. You're assuming you can.
Yeah. And the last thing you want to do is sign a contract of sale that may be unconditional and you can't actually settle.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, then you're going to realise a loss of some of your capital, whatever you've put down in deposit and costs associated.
But unfortunately, human nature is people tend to be a bit knee-jerk reaction and probably get caught up in that moment scenario.
Yep.
So I suggest you prepare yourself correctly before you go out there and property hunt.
Absolutely.
It's purchasing a property for the first time or whether it's buying an investment property.
Yep. Now, you mentioned earlier that a lot of your clients are self-employed.
I do.
Which is, you know, a bit of a niche. Obviously, we imagine that we've got a combination of people listening to the podcast who would either be employees, you know, people working for others, and a number of people that might have their own businesses.
Yep.
Are there significant differences in how someone that is an employee with a set wage versus a self-employed person has to go about the loan process?
There is, because if you're PAYG, it is what it is. You can't change anything. You can't alter anything. A self-employed person's income has got a few grey areas. There's also other factors to take in consideration.
Yep.
On a self-employed scenario, You've got tax accountants that, you know, water the whole income down. You need to add back depreciation, interest, and so forth. So it's just a bit more involved in identifying their income and verifying it.
Yeah, okay. Because, yeah, as you say, if I'm an employee and I just get my group certificate or my pay slip, that's it. More. I can't really show anything else other than maybe some investment income.
Yep.
Whereas if I own my own business, what I actually get into my own personal bank account may not be a true indication of what the business is earning and I could lay claim to.
And you control it.
That's the difference. And I can control it.
As a PAYG, you're not controlling that income.
Right.
It's more verified.
Yep.
So with self-employed, there's options for them. There's things like low docs they can do.
Now, explain, why would they want a low doc loan?
Well, it could be their tax returns have been done in recent times.
Yep.
So they can use their BAS statements.
Okay.
Through BAS statements, they can verify income. They could work an income amount out of that.
Yep.
Or it could be an accountant's declaration letter.
Right.
So the broker will then work out what does the loan amount.
So when we're talking low doc, the major banks don't, do they offer low doc loans?
They don't offer low doc. The only one, ANZ, has a low doc qualifier, which is a portal using their BASs.
Right.
So you take four of the most recent BASs of that client, work out their sales, put it through their portal, identify what industry they're in, put in the figure that you're trying to aim for, and it comes back and tells you yes or no.
Right. And that's a calculator that you have access to.
Correct.
So you, in part of your assessment of a client, you're going to all of the other lenders and checking these calculators to see who may or who may not fit.
Yep.
Yeah.
And thereafter, the second tier lenders like Pepper, La Trobe, and so forth, that there's many of them out there.
Okay. So for self-employed people that are thinking of buying a property or refinancing, and obviously they're not going to have access to the major banks as readily and as easily as someone that's just a PAYG, as an employed person.
Correct.
So what should they expect differences in rates and terms then by going to a second tier lender or a different?
If the income can't be verified to the amount that's required.
Yep.
Yeah. Normally you'd pay in most cases an extra 1%. In most cases.
An extra 1%. Yep. Okay. So can you give us some ballpark figures of where the lenders are at the moment? It's always a topical thing. What's the mortgage rate that people could expect? So if I was a regular PAYG, say a vanilla as we've talked about before, what sort of rate could I hope to get on my home loan?
Out of the majors, most of them are doing sort of around that 3.80.
Okay.
Give or take a couple of base points here and there.
Pretty sharp. Yep.
Investment rates have dropped down dramatically.
Yeah, now that's a change only recently, isn't it?
It has.
That they've started to open their books again.
Well, APRA put the brakes on, as you recall, a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And most of the banks met their criteria, so now they've opened that appetite up. And as you know, the property market was rising, and APRA achieved what it wanted to. And over a three-year period, you know, in the lending areas where it's all controlled, APRA just was turning a quarter tap each time to get the effect.
So we have just touched on this point in previous episodes of our podcast, but for those listeners that have missed it, what we're talking about here is that APRA put some regulations in on all of the major banks for their lending, saying that they had to limit new investment loans and interest-only loans to a certain amount of all new loans created.
30% cap or something,
Okay, so they did that 2 or 3 years ago, roughly.
It was, yeah.
And then I think it was towards the end of last year, start of this year, they said, well, look, you know, the reason we put those controls in place, you know, those issues have passed, so we're now happy to remove those restrictions and the banks can start to lend freely again.
Well, they want to take the heat out of the property market. As you know, it was rising.
Yeah,
it was
at an unsustainable level.
Correct. And the last thing the government wanted was some sort of crash.
Now, the way the banks had to react to that, though, if my understanding is correct, was they didn't so much say we're not offering those investment-only loans or the interest-only loans, to more and more people on this. They're starting to bring their rates down to be more and more competitive so that more and more people will want to start borrowing from them again.
You've been in the property market. I think you noticed that over a period of time, as APRA was doing a quarter turn each time, that last quarter kind of created a scenario where there was a little bit of a landslide in the property market.
Yeah.
So the next panic became is we certainly don't want the property market to crash either.
That's right.
So we need to take re-correct that. So they're trying to find a balance.
Yeah.
Is what they're doing.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think it's getting there now.
Okay. And what are you... So you mentioned that investment loans are coming down, the rates. What are you seeing them at now?
Oh, I think Bank of Melbourne at the moment I'm doing for a client, 3.89, 2-year fixed.
Right. So that's basically in line with an owner-occupier loan.
It's not far off on that one.
Pretty similar.
But most of the majors are in the high threes, low fours in that area. Fixed rates, that is.
Yeah, okay.
Variable in the, 4.20 thereabout.
Yep. And we mentioned before, owner... the self-employed people don't always get the same rate offers as employed people?
Well, only if their income can't be verified to the extent that's what's required.
Right, so the low-doc scenario.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So, and what sort of rate could a borrower expect on a low-doc scenario?
Between 5.50, if it's an investment.
Yep. Okay, so there is a significant...
Yeah, 1 to 1.5%.
Right. Yep. Okay, so someone that may be planning to buy an investment property may not have a definitive time frame, maybe sometime in the next 6 to 12 months. Can they take themselves from a position, with your guidance, to go from, I'm currently a low-doc scenario, so I'm going to be in that 5.5%. Yep. How would I be able to package up my affairs and get all my documents in order to be in a full doc and get that 3.8 to 4% loan?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll liaison with the accountant, and if the accountant feels that person's income stream will be X amount in period in 6 months' time, and he completes the tax returns, or the business is trending upwards, we believe his income or her income will be around about that figure. Then we could always refinance it and take it down again.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not the case a self-employed person has to go through a low doc. It's only when their taxes aren't prepared,
yes,
or the way they're structured is not verified to the amount they require for that loan.
Right, so the bank doesn't have absolute clarity and transparency on their income.
Again, the bank needs to do its risk mitigation, and that is, it needs to be able to verify your income is able to sustain the loan amount you require, and if you can't do it through your tax returns, then it's done via either the BAS statements or via an accountant.
Yeah. Great. Look, Terry, we might take another quick breather and we'll come back and wrap this up.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning, and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03 8657 7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
Okay, welcome back, listeners. We're just coming to the end of our very first special episode with our first guest, Terry Kyprios from Financial Network Group, who's been telling us all about the mortgages and mortgage approval process. A couple of final questions I have for you, Terry. The LVRs, so loan-to-value ratios that the banks are lending at the moment. So typically when we look at a client wanting to buy an investment property, we run the cash flows and everything, and we don't want to put them in a position where they're highly leveraged at, say, a 90% borrowings or having to get in the position where they're buying lender's mortgage insurance, which becomes an extra cost, because then any hit to their income or any loss of rent and they're potentially in default by not being able to service. So we don't tend to have clients go for the highest LVR around, but obviously we do want to use a balance of a high LVR to get the best use of borrowings. With the different lenders that you're seeing, are there variables in the loan-to-value ratios they're offering?
In terms of valuations coming back?
Just in terms of, like, do some banks say they'll only lend 60 or 70% of the value, whereas others might lend 80 or 90?
All the major banks will go up to 80% without lender's mortgage insurance.
Right, so they're always pretty much in line with each other.
They are. The only time is when you go into second-tier lenders and you're self-employed. If your LVR is stronger, like, you're only borrowing up to 60%, then your rate's going to be better than what it will be if you have to go to 80. A lot of the low-doc loans most of them will only go up to about that 70. The odd one will go up to 80. You'll pay a higher rate.
Yeah, okay.
So that's when a rate can be different.
Yep.
When it's a low doc.
Right. So if I wanted a lower borrowing amount on a low doc scenario, I could get a more competitive rate.
Than what you would if you were going up higher in the LVR.
Yeah, so there are a few different factors at play.
Yeah.
And recently, with obviously, you know, we've discussed quite a bit lately about how the property market's been softening and in decline across pretty much everywhere in Australia. Have you noticed any of your clients, when it comes to settlement, the valuations being in line with contract prices or any discrepancies?
Not major at this stage, because I think there's a bit of a lag time. So it depends when that person's purchased a property in that particular pocket. If there hasn't been a lot of activity in the last 12 months, I'm finding the valuations are coming up pretty close to contract price or right on contract price. I've only had the odd one that's come a bit below to what it would have, say, 6 months ago.
Yeah, okay. So buyers, you know, providing they're making sound decisions, whether their investment may be using our advocacy service or they're buying off their own bat, as long as they've been watching the market and they know they're paying a fair value, they'd be pretty confident that they'd be able to get their loan-to-value ratio to stack up and the valuation will come in.
At this stage, yes.
Yeah, now, okay.
That may change in the coming months, as you probably know more in this area than I do. Valuers are sort of working historically, as you know.
Yes.
And a lot of the current property sales aren't going to affect that till, you know, 2, 3, 4 months down the track.
True. And if the market is declining, I guess the settled sales they're using for their comparisons are at higher rates. So therefore, you would expect that your valuations would come in at least at contract price.
That's right. So I don't think we've seen the full impact in that area. So depending where the property market goes from here onwards, whether it's stalemates or if it has a decline, further declines, then I think you'll find that'll impact down the track.
Yeah, okay.
With loans.
So something to be aware of, if the property market continues to decline, we would expect that most people would be able to get, you know, valuations at the price they're paying.
Yep.
In a rising market, it may be a little different.
And it's the same thing with people going through refinance. There's consumers out there, what I call prison loans. They can't budge. They can't move.
Yeah, this is an interesting scenario. Explain a little bit more.
Well, because APRA's changed a lot of the algorithms in the serviceability, what someone could borrow hypothetically, let's say a year plus ago, $500,000, nothing's changed other than the bank's ratios.
So I've borrowed $500,000, I'm still on the same income, I've got the same expenses.
All of a sudden, on those same circumstances, you may only be able to borrow low 400s to mid 400s.
Right. So my ability to refinance is limited because...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's where some people are just caught in what I call prison loans. They can't budge or anything, and they're really at the mercy of the bank then.
Ooh, so if they've got a rate that might be significantly above what the current market rate is, they might say a refinance would be beneficial, but...
May not be in the position to do that. So you're stuck in that area.
Okay. Any advice you could give to someone that's in that position?
Yeah, if they are, I would contact the bank, have a look at what their fixed rates are going at the moment. And if it's lower than what you are and you're not paying really over and above your normal payments, most of these fixed rates generally allow you to put an additional $10,000 a year.
Yep.
Maybe be time, if you're in that situation, fix it for 24 months.
Yeah, okay. Great.
Lower your rate that way.
Well, Terry, we've covered a fair bit today. I think hopefully our listeners have got a fair bit out of it. It's a pretty important area for anyone that's involved in the property market. You know, one of the biggest factors that impact people's ability to buy and hold property is their access to borrowings, their ability to hold property, you know, with loans. I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Go for it.
Give me the three most important things someone should either look at or have in order to be able to get a loan and get the best loan.
I would source a broker that you feel comfortable with.
Okay, so that's number one is use
Absolutely.
A broker.
I think so. Yep. I know that's been biased, but I can't see the benefits of you going directly to a bank as opposed to going to a broker.
Great. So that's number one. Have you got a second one for us? It's a good one to put you on the spotlight.
Yeah, it is. Definitely do a credit file check on yourself. But the broker will do that if you engage with a broker.
Okay, so let's just go back over some old ground here, because firstly, get a broker, and we mentioned earlier your website, which again is?
www.financialnet.com.au.
Okay, so there's a broker you can contact straight away to get some help. And also, your second tip was to get your credit record report, which you mentioned there's an online service people can access.
There is, and that is www.myfreecredit.com. investorexchange.com.au, and you can do this once a year.
Okay.
And I recommend you do that. Even though you think there's something that's not on there, I've come across clients that had no idea and they've copped a minor, but still a blemish on their credit report.
Okay. And your final one, Terry, the one last one to potentially help someone preparing to get a mortgage or refinance?
Have your affairs in order. Just get everything proper and make sure that you know the information is there for the broker to be able to assess your situation properly.
Fantastic. Well, Terry, mate, thanks very much for coming
in today.
Thanks
for inviting me along, Brett.
A pleasure.
Looking forward to catching up with you soon.
Well, you know, first guest, so you know, hopefully this is something we may be able to do on a semi-regular basis for our listeners out there and bring some experts in from outside our organisation that can shed some light on areas that might be of benefit. So again, Terry from Financial Network Group, thanks for attending. And to our listeners, we'll be back with our regular broadcast with all the four of us for the next episode. Hope you're well, and bye for now.
You've been listening to this week's episode of The Investor Exchange. To access this episode's show notes, go to theinvestorexchange.com.au and follow us on Facebook at The Investor Exchange for updates on our latest episodes. This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Before making any investment decision, contact United Global Capital by emailing ugc.net.au for a personalized, no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Or alternatively, email us at info@ugc.net.au.